Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome back to Upfront at the Euros. I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
England's group stage party continues with another win, this time over a spirited Northern Ireland. Are England favourites now? If they're not favourites, then France might be there through to the quarterfinals on the back of more saucy attack. And we said Norway would be dark horses. Well, that didn't quite work out how we thought. Yeah, a bit embarrassed on the Norway predictions, but we'll get on to that a little bit later because, boy, have they had a bad Euros. Second consecutive Euros, they've not made it through to the quarterfinals. So, yeah, that's pretty bad. And we will get stuck into that in a little bit. But we're going to start with England because, sorry, listener, but if you haven't already realised we're going to hype up England so much during this tournament, then you listen to the wrong podcast, okay? So it's going to happen. If you want to fast forward, we'll get producer Charlie to put in the notes when we stop talking about England, so you can just fast forward if you want to listen to this chat. It was an impressive, at times, 5-0 win over Northern Ireland. But I want to start in the first sort of like 15, 20 minutes of the game where England were on the ropes.
I think if you look at the headline points, if you didn't watch the game and you saw a 5-0 win, you'd be expecting exactly that. And you'd think that England had taken the game home, buried all their chances and had a really successful game. But I think the opening half, I think, was quite disappointing for everyone. I think England looked very flat. Obviously, they're missing Serena out with COVID at the moment. But I think, obviously, she would have been watching. And I think everyone on the bench was heavily mic'd up, given her all the instructions. But I just felt that they looked flat, very complacent. Obviously, they're already through to the quarterfinals. And you could kind of tell it looked a little bit shaky. And in the first kind of opening minutes, I mean, Northern Ireland already had a chance within 2 minutes or so. And Mary Earp's putting out a fairly standard but still good and crucial save. They looked exposed at the back, and they didn't need to be.
Yeah, I thought they just didn't look switched on from the first whistle, and I think Northern Ireland probably knew, having seen recent England performances, that the second half was going to be tough, that the changes that England would likely make, you know, they would struggle to keep up with that. So I think they knew the first half was where they needed to get at England, and they did. You said they looked exposed. They did. Northern Ireland got in at the back a couple of times. I think exposed maybe a weakness that England have, that if you've got a better team with, you know, maybe more clinical wingers or forwards, England could have been punished. So it's probably something they're going to want to look at for sure. But I do think you're factoring in that they probably thought they were going to win the game and they already knew they were through. But I don't think Serena would like to see that kind of attitude.
I think she'd been really disappointed with that. I think obviously she's watching it from whatever isolation pod she's in, and I can imagine the anger and frustration. I mean, she's pretty hard to impress anyway, but I can't imagine that she would have been looking at that and thinking, yeah, we've taken the game home to them. But I can't say that I really agree with her approach to the game in a way.
The lack of rotation.
The lack of rotation, yeah. I mean, we've already gone through. I think the impact players that did come on in the second half, if they'd have started in the first half, I think, you know, they've got so much more to prove in terms of trying to win their shirt, trying to win a place in the starting 11. And I just think that would have been a really good opportunity to rotate the squad a little bit and give them an opportunity to not only get a cap, but also, you know, get some run-out time because they might be needed further on in the tournament.
Yeah, that decision definitely got people talking. We don't normally get that many interesting snippets from pre-match press conferences, but we know that Serena Wiegmann's built this reputation of being quite ruthless, being a strong decision maker. And when Katie Zellum was called up to the England camp and England were winning games 10-0, it took her like 3 or 4 camps to even make her debut when she hadn't had a cap before. So we know in the past Serena is not a pity cap kind of person, not a pity appearance person. But I think a lot of people were surprised, Chloe. I think I was a little bit surprised not to see any rotation. I completely think there's a reason to say you need rhythm and you need routine. But I think some fresh legs wouldn't have gone amiss. I think Rachel, I think you're right that there was, you know, that their heads were kind of switched off a little bit because they'd already qualified. And I think there was also an air of kind of like overconfidence and arrogance. They'd probably seen the way that Northern Ireland had played in their other games and thought, OK, well, you know, we're going to have time on the ball. We can, you know, we don't need to play necessarily a really high tempo game. But I was so impressed with Northern Ireland's press. They put England under so much pressure and got rewarded for it. And also their kind of low block defensively just allowed them to pick off England and then play quite good counter-attacking opportunities. They just didn't have that final bit of quality where it mattered, but they had some really good opportunities in the first half. Mary Earps had to make a couple of early good saves. There was that chance, I can't remember who it was, who ended up kind of just hitting the side netting as well. So, I mean, Kenny Shields, not a fan of the guy. I think he's extremely strange. But he, you know, he must have been feeling pretty positive about their opening, 20 minutes or so of the game. And I can understand they would be absolutely gutted at the full-time scoreline because there were so many positives there. And also the fans were so loud. I mean, there was a pocket in the far corner of Northern Ireland fans and they were going all night long, just like non-stop drumming, screaming Green White Army. Like, it was really good. And I think what I really enjoyed is that brought up the England fans. And I think it was one of the best atmospheres we've seen so far for England in this tournament, because the noise of Northern Ireland fans, it just meant that the England fans knew that they had to bring it as well. And I think that did really help England turn it around. I think they just focused a little bit more. They realised that they needed to switch on a little bit more. And those sloppy passes, they started to find the space. And then once that first goal went in, you just felt like, Rachel, the tide was going to turn a little bit.
Yeah, I don't want to sound negative. It was overall a good performance. They've come out with a 5-0 win, top the group, won all their games. But you know, you're kind of looking at the performance with a view to playing tougher teams going forward in the quarterfinals. And to be honest, it's kind of good for them to be tested. It's good for them to maybe be on the ropes a little bit, just as a little bit of a reminder that this is what's going to happen if they continue to progress in the tournament. So yeah, it's absolutely not all doom and gloom, but it's just something that is worth considering, given we were so enthusiastic and in cloud nine after the Norway game. It's, I think, brought us down to earth a little bit, but you know, it's not hugely concerning. But yeah, overall it was a great night. Brilliant performance in the second half. I thought the substitutes had talk about an impact from Alessia Russo. Great goal from Fan Kirby. So glad she got on the score sheet. And Beth Mead, twinkle toes, dancing through defences and scoring another goal. She's going to keep getting asked about that golden boot. And then, yeah, Alessia Russo, two goals. The second goal particularly was
chef kiss.
Magic.
So
unreal.
Good.
We've got, well, let's break down that goal, right? Because if anyone hasn't seen it, Tooner, Ella Tooner. That just... It just really gets me like excited when I see my favourite hun, Ella Toon, linking up with her partner, Alessia Russo, on the pitch. Manchester United duo, so good. You got Tooner just delivering the most sumptuous pass, and then Russo just turns it with, I think, is it her left foot, to then create the space behind her, runs onto her touch that's like almost like a backheel touch, takes it around the corner, and then finishes with her right foot. It is sensational. On the BBC website, they've done a little video where you can watch it like from four different angles. I was watching it in the car home, like with a big smile on my face, like, this is amazing. And she could have had a hat trick. The girl was on fire.
She had two more chances after that, more sort of clear-cut chances. And you can see how disappointed she was not to end up with more goals to her name and credit, because the finish that she pulled off in that round the world, she was at a 360 before turning in and having a shot. It was bizarre. She always made it more difficult and then sort of turned it off. And the technique on that is unreal, because the ball fired into her in the first instance from Toon was not an easy ball to get under control and turn that round. But I think I do just want to say, obviously, I know we're focusing on, you know, how sort of slack I think we were in the first half. But I think, you know, you've got to give credit there to Northern Ireland. And I think their progression in the competition, whilst their first two games weren't, they weren't great. I think sort of putting it bluntly and summarising. But also, I think they've really worked hard on minimising the mistakes that they've made in the first two games. You know, in the opening games, they were now getting tight to, you know, Bronze and Daly. They stopped playing out from the back, which was killing them on occasion. And I feel like, you know, defensively, they were such a bloody unit. I mean, the centre-halves, as well as Jackie Burns in goal, were doing the absolute mostest to clear away the danger. So whilst we're sort of, you know, given England a lot of stick for the first half, I think we've got to give Northern Ireland a lot of credit.
I want to put you guys on the spot now, because Ellen White, you know, stepped up in the Norway game, and we know that she is a different animal in major tournaments. She still has, you know, a great finishing ability, but she just, her movement is not the same. She's not as agile. You know, she isn't as much of a total player as Alessia Russo is right now in the differing stage of their career. So I'm going to put you guys on the spot. Chloe, I'm going to come to you first. The big question on my lips is, would you start Alessia Russo over Ellen White on Wednesday in that quarterfinal against a team we're yet to find out?
I think that's a really bloody tough question. And I, quite frankly, I think that's disgusting of you to put me in this position.
Don't sit shocking. On the fence, man. Come on. Come on.
That's my job.
I mean, Ellen White has had two and a half, really, phenomenal performances for England in these opening games. And I just, I think it's going to be very hard. I mean, Serena also is a stickler for consistency. And I can't see her actually, even if I say... even if my valid opinion on the England bench is not enough to convince her that Russo should be starting the next game, given that performance and the impact that she had, I think she's a player with a lot of desire. She's a young player. She wants to make a name for herself. And I think she will give it 300,000% in the quarterfinal, if you can possibly do
that's
that.
That's a lot of percent.
That's a lot of percent. Yeah. I mean, maths was never my strong point, but she's going to give it a lot of percent. And... I want to say yes. I think she should start. I think it would just have a little bit of a fresher injection up front. But I think that Ellen's been amazing.
I'm trying to work out what you're saying here, Chloe. Are you saying stick with Ellen and bring Russo off on the bench?
This is about as confusing as you trying to work out England getting to a final.
Just give me an answer, man. Come on.
Do you know what? Yeah, stick with Ellen for the first half. Bring Russo on for the second for that impact play.
Okay, noted. Right, Rachel, how about you?
I would start Ellen White. I think England would
clean,
benefit.
Concise, yeah. To the point, Chloe. That's what I was looking for.
That's a little bit rich, isn't it?
England would benefit from that consistency. I think they have enough kind of stress about it being a home tournament, about knowing they have to get through the next round. And I think making changes would put pressure on Alessia Russo. And I think, I'd stick with Ellen White, as Chloe said. Get Alessia off and on in the second half and let her bang in a couple of goals.
See, I do agree with both of you, but...
That sounds like you're sitting on the fence,
but,
mate.
But no. The reason I would start Russo is because I do see the upside of bringing her on as an impact sub, but what I fear is if it's too late in a game and, say, England are 2-0 down, they're chasing a game and Russo comes on in the 60th minute... There's not enough time for her to deliver what she needs to.
She scored within 2 minutes of coming on yesterday.
I know, but it, that's a different situation. That it is a different sort of game. I think it's going to be a tougher test, say it's Spain in the quarterfinal. And, you know, England, for whatever reason, you know, we know Spain don't create a lot of opportunities, don't score a lot of goals. They're struggling at the moment. They're not really playing a centre forward. But say England go 1-2-0 down against Spain, and they're chasing a game. She's not come in a situation yet where England are chasing a game. And that is what I worry about. I mean, England are yet to concede at this tournament. They've scored, 15 goals, is it? 14 goals? 8 plus 5, 14. And they're yet to have to chase a game. And that's why I feel like starting with Russo would be a better option, because I feel like they need to hit the ground running in these knockout stages and continue to deliver what they have. And Ellen White is still missing chances. As much as she was clinical in the Norway game, she missed some brilliant chances in the Belgium game. She missed some brilliant chances in the Austria game. She missed some brilliant chances yesterday. England could have been 1-0 up if White had put away that early chance she had. So
Alessia could have had four.
Yeah, and also Ellen White's on target for Golden Boot. Like, she's, you know...
No, Mead is... So ish. Is Russo. Russo.
I mean, they're all up there.
They're all up there. I don't know. I'm just... We could talk about this all day, but we'll
see
what
happens.
But also,
we don't know how Serena would react in a situation like that. And she probably wouldn't wait until the 60th minute to start trying to make a change in a game where they're losing 2-0 and it's a knockout stage. So because we haven't seen that, we don't know how the manager would react either. She could be making changes at halftime, you know. So we're kind of... We haven't been in that scenario before, so it is quite hard to predict.
So what would you do then? Bring on, if things weren't going to plan then, you started Russo, would you bring on Ellen White as an impact?
Yeah, potentially, yeah. Just flip, reverse it. I mean, there's so much depth. This is what we know. There is so much depth with England, and that's what's exciting. And I want to shout out Fran Kirby, because her goal was absolute quality, and it took a special bit of quality to break the deadlock there and give England the confidence. And who knows what would have happened if Kirby hadn't stuck away that goal, because we saw how England were frustrated in October against Online at Wembley, and it was same again last night. So massive credit to Kirby for breaking the deadlock and creating the space and the opportunity for England to just to flourish. a word on Kenny Shields, as per. When that own goal went in, a really fortunate own goal for Burrows, I'm pretty sure I saw the man like slap himself in the face with annoyance and anger, which was a sight. And then, of course, afterwards, he said what so many managers have been saying in the build-up and during this tournament, which is, you know, it would be a crying shame if England lost this tournament. You know, he basically, he said, what did he say? Everyone else might as well go home.
It would be a failure.
It would be a failure. And he said, everyone else might as well go home. It's basically England's tournament now. Now, everyone is going to try and troll this team to put pressure on them. And we know the king of trolling is Mr. Kenny Shields. So I expect nothing less. But do you guys, I mean, we know that he's a bit of a wind-up merchant, but what do you guys think about this rhetoric now around England being the out-and-out favourites? Do you think it's warranted, or do you think it's other managers and nations just trying to pile the pressure on?
It's bullshit. They're one of the favourites. They're not out-and-out favourites. And to try and say that and ignore the performances that Germany and France have put in, the fact that you've got, I know Sweden haven't absolutely shone, but they're still up there with qualifying, and they're the kind of team that can put in a shift and get a job done. Totally understand. Managers are totally going to do that. But it makes you look a bit silly to try and say there's any out-and-out favourite in this tournament at all.
I agree. I think it's shithousery. And I think he's tried to pile the pressure on, and I think it sounds like sour grapes to me.
It's a parting gift.
Yeah, it's that. And I think I was just really disappointed with his behaviour on the sidelines. I think his
squad was really
put in,
screaming at them, wasn't he? It was quite horrible.
It wasn't nice. And I think, you know, as a player, you're on the pitch, you're doing your absolute best. It's the first time they've reached this competition. They've had some massive historic occasions with their first goal. They've put in an absolute shift in that first half. I mean, defensively, they were fucking solid. And then for that own goal, it's just one of those, you know, ridiculous things that just happens. And then you could see how visibly annoyed he was. And for me, as a player, I'd be thinking, fuck off. Like, really? Like, we're doing our absolute bloody best and these things just bloody happen. So it's not nice when you look over, you're already feeling down. Five goals have just gone in and one of your own players just netted, got the back of the net.
Sweet
and,
goal as well.
It was amazing. I mean, the technique on it was fantastic. It was like Cinderella.
He lost his mind. But he lost his mind when that own goal went in. And it was like, well, she just obviously didn't do it on purpose.
And you weren't coming back from 4-0 down anyway.
No, but
it wasn't
just
a critical goal. And, to look
and they're
over
already
on the
out
sideline
of the tournament, right?
Yeah.
Like, this whole match felt like a way for them to finish the tournament with their fans in fine voice, and it was a party for them. It was like a farewell party and a celebration of how far they've come. And his behaviour on the sidelines kind of turned it into a slightly sad vibe.
This is not a Champions League final for Northern Ireland, and I just it was unnecessary and unacceptable. So yeah, for me, I just think, I mean, I have mixed views on Kenny Shields anyway, but I was just really disappointed with his behaviour.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with him going forward. Obviously, the man is never far away from controversy, but you know, a really, really important words from Northern Ireland captain Marissa Callaghan at full time, because we know that this tournament has, you know, had the transformational potential for Northern Irish women's football. And we don't like to, on this pod, talk about, you know, women's football inspiring kids all the time, and that's not what this is about. But this team were put into full-time training as a whole group for the first time in any of their careers. And Callaghan spoke about the fact that the majority of the group will be going back to jobs, will be going back to semi-pro football, to part-time football straight after this tournament. And, you know, she called on the RSFA, she called on the league, she called on everyone to continue to support women's football. A bit like, you know, that impassioned speech we saw from Marta in 2019 after Brazil got knocked out. She wants to see this be the start and not the end of a journey for Northern Irish women's football. And I think that's really important, because, you know, this shows how much potential there is, and the fact that, you know, they played two really good competitive games against England now in this tournament and in October at Wembley in the World Cup qualifiers. So, you know, hopefully this is not the last time we're going to see them, and this is going to be something that they can build on with or without Kenny Shields. But they need the support. There is no point in just, you know, in giving this team a little bit of full-time backing, because it's just not going to get them anywhere.
True, I think there is a lot of positives to take from this tournament for them. And I really hope it is a kickstarter for them in Northern Ireland to grow the game more. It is a small country, we have to remember that. And it takes a lot to turn a league professional. But hopefully this is, you know, we've seen it in England, the catalysts, the things that have kind of sparked another leap in women's football. And hopefully this is that for them, because yes, we don't like to bang on about the whole inspired generation, but they've absolutely inspired not just people in Northern Ireland, I think probably people around the world who've tuned into the tournament with some really impressive and performances they can be proud of. And yeah, I hope this is a moment we look back on in 5, 6, 7 years' time for Northern Irish football and say this is what changed it for them.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
We've got to talk about the other game in Group A. Austria 1, Norway 0. I mean, this was pretty sensational. Nicole Biller with the absolute peach of a header, heading in a beautiful Verena Hanshaw ball. And shocking Norway, shocking the tournament. We know that Austria are a very good side. They got to the semi-finals of the last Euros. You know, there's so much... there's so much potential in that team. They're organised, they're frustrated England. But I think a lot of people thought that the result for Norway against England was going to be a wake-up call. And Norway did not get the job done, Rachel.
No, I think it's further... Like, I'd say initially they thought they could write off that England performance as something they want to forget, learn from, never going to happen again. And look, it didn't. It didn't kind of, it wasn't that kind of performance against Austria. But it's a wake-up call. It's an issue, I think, there in the Norway team. That England performance wasn't a once-off. The team are struggling to be cohesive. They've got real problems at the back, which we talked about at the beginning of the tournament, but they are far kind of maybe worse than we alluded to or maybe thought. And I think, yeah, there was a real struggle for the team to come together. They're not getting the best out of their players, which is crazy when you think of the players they do have on that team. If you are not getting the absolute best out of them, there is a serious problem. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see what happens after this tournament in Norway with the team. The manager, Ada Hegerberg, said, you know, the responsibility was on everyone there. There was no kind of one person responsible for the performances. But it's sad to see because we tipped them as a dark horse and now we look a bit stupid. But, you know, they are a powerhouse of a team in women's football. We've seen them go far in the Euros before. And we kind of expected that with the quality in their team. It was a surprise, not going to lie.
There are a lot of questions around the future of Martin Sjögren and rumours as well that Hege Riise could be up to replace him. Current manager of the Norway under-19s, she's done a good job there, to be fair, but a lot of people will recognise her from a fairly dodgy interim job at England. But I feel like, you know, she was kind of set up to fail there because it was a bizarre appointment in a very short space of time, and then she took on the Team GB role as part of that, and it was a bit of a disaster. But anyway, wait to see what happens there. But Chloe, massive credit for Austria, and I don't know if anyone's seen the celebrations afterwards, which are becoming a bit of a tradition with Austrian women's team, is that they have a massive party in the changing room and in the mix zone after a big win. And the chairs were out, the like signs, floor signs to say it's like slippery, please be careful, were out. It was a party, and you know what? They earned it.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want to see the state of Falmer Stadium changing rooms after that. And I do feel sorry for the poor stewards who probably have to clean up whatever carnage they've created.
Hopefully they cleaned it up after themselves. A lot of footballers are quite players. Good like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I always was. Never. No, I think, I mean, and too right for that celebration as well. I mean, they weren't probably the favourites to get out of this group. I mean, we all thought that Norway were going to take home that sort of second spot. And I think it's just been a massive disappointment. And I don't really blame us for getting it wrong in terms of thinking how successful Norway would be. Because
and
quality.
They've had some good results in the warm-ups this tournament as well. It's not like we just kind of, you know, picked it out of nowhere. They looked decent,
yeah,
didn't they?
That wasn't an eeny, meeny, miny, mo guess. I mean, the quality that
don't tell people how we do our choices.
I mean, we didn't just rely on Rachel's rabbit, the animal.
Who was right. Maybe we
Who
should
was
have.
Completely right. But in the same breath, like, I just think, you know, credit to Austria and, you know, getting out of the group stages in a tough group. But I think for Norway, I think they become completely unstuck and unsettled in that game against England last week and this week, Monday. What are we calling it? Monday. And I think that really unsettled them. It really shattered their confidence. And I think they were completely exposed at the back, like Rachel said. And that carried on through into this game. So it wasn't like they'd even sort of picked up on their weaknesses and thought, you know what, we're going to deal with this for this game because it's so critical. We have to get this right. They didn't. It showed. Yeah. And I think it was the right result for that game, 1-0.
A few other games we've got to speak about as well. Group D, France defeating Belgium 2-1. Probably the main takeaway and what everyone is talking about from this game is the unfortunate injury to Marie-Antoinette Katoto. She went off injured in the first half. She did not look like she was in a good way, hobbling, you know, had ice on her knee, but really struggling even on some crutches at full time. Karine Diacre said that, you know, she was absolutely fine. And then obviously further scans and things like that, it was announced that she was going to be out for the tournament, ACL injury, and yet another big name, not just this tournament, but this year, to lose from an ACL injury. We've got Kristen Press, we've got Jennifer Marajan, Katerina Macario, Alexia Pateas, and now Katoto as well. It's a massive shame because she's obviously such a big part of France's team. She is a lethal attacker, and they've still got so much quality there. Diani obviously scored in this game and is a fantastic player. Baltimore,
Gaoru,
Cascarino, Guiari's having a fantastic tournament. There is so much talent there, but it is a massive loss, Rachel.
It's huge. And if that's not kicking the ass of lots of medical people saying we seriously need to do extensive research into ACL injuries in female athletes, I don't know what more needs to be done. I know some stuff has been done over the last few years, but we need more and we need it quickly because it's actually getting ridiculous how many players are picking up ACL injuries.
And also look at the calendar, right? I think a lot of the conversation around Pateas especially has been how much football she's been playing. She's been playing a ridiculous amount of football over the last couple of years with very little breaks and off time because Barcelona have been in every single competition. They've been playing in, you know, ICC international tournaments that are just glorified friendlies, really. They're meaningless, but they flew over there for that. She's obviously been a massive part of Spain's, qualifying for the World Cup, etc. And even though we always talk about the expansion of the WSL and so many teams want to play more games, actually for the biggest teams, the demands on players and the squad sizes aren't really matching up, Chloe, like with how many games they're having to play because they're in so many competitions.
Yeah, massively. I think, they are a lot of the top teams are now trying to look at the workloads of some of the players and trying to do more rotation, especially towards the end of the season. I think when you're more tired, I think it's not been helped also by the immense heat wave that we've got over here. Mm. And sometimes, that plays a factor as well. But I think, like Rachel said, I've got to echo that because there's just not enough research around ACL, MCL, PCL injuries. And they're starting to happen more and more frequently and to top players. And it ruins the competition. And it ruins the games when you've got players who are dropped out for long periods of time. You've also got to think about the mental impact that it's having on these players and how difficult it is to do the rehab and to come back a year, 18 months later. So, yeah, we need to step up in terms of the medical research because a lot of the research at the moment is purely male focused, and even things like periods have an impact on your susceptibility to injuries. So it's we've got to step our game up in that regard.
You have to factor in that there's a World Cup next year as well. So these injuries now aren't just knocking them out of the Euros, but potentially threatening their place at a World Cup next year. And when we talk about how much football players are playing, that's another major tournament straight after a season. So yeah, it's definitely
and
worth
only,
looking at.
And only, because of the pandemic and the way that the tournaments were delayed, we've now got back-to-back tournaments, which wouldn't necessarily happen.
Olympics and then another Euros.
It's going to be really tough on these players. So I know Emma Hayes has talked about it, this season already about the calendar. And she's also been very vocal around monitoring the menstrual cycle and the impact it has on injuries. And she just did a column in The Telegraph literally yesterday about it. And obviously anyone who's watched the DAZN Chelsea doc would have seen the research they've been doing and the impact that's had on their team. And lots of teams have followed suit as well. So it's definitely, there is stuff going on. And I know, Susie Rack wrote about research that Roehampton University, I think it was, were doing. This was like 3 years ago Susie wrote that piece. It's just, the research takes time. They need enough, people to come forward to study. Then, you need to study enough people, therefore, to find the patterns to then work out how you can combat that. So it's almost just like, the research and how it's being undertaken is not happening fast enough in order to find something that might be able to not solve it because you can't, but just support and work out a way to better manage players.
But I think also maybe the FA for us, obviously in England, need to step in a little bit. Because I think when you look about, this competition, if we make it to the final stages, that's the end of July. The WSL season starts on, the second weekend of September? So realistically, that's a max of...
And you've got Champions League qualifying in August.
Yep, so you've got, best part of 4 weeks to recover and also do your pre-season as well with all the new players that you might have signed over that period. So it's just no time. So I think for the FA, maybe they should have been thinking about maybe starting the season a little bit later on, because it's not like we don't have loads of weekends where there aren't fixtures and things. So I know it's a bit difficult, but
the problem with that is then finishing late when you've got another major tournament next summer.
It's a squeeze.
I don't
want to be the FA scheduler. Absolutely not.
I was going to say, though, when we talk about professionalising the women's game and people looking at us and saying, oh, that goalkeeper did this, therefore, or Wendy Renard missed a penalty, therefore women shouldn't be professional. But it's not just about paying players' wages. This is what we're talking about when we're talking about professionalising the game. It's the way that women are trained, the type of training they do, the research that takes place in the background. It's that's how we get the game.
The physio, the sports science, nutrition. This all impacts everyone. You know, how much money they have in order to have the best home environment as well, in order to make sure that they can recover and rest as well as possible. You know, a lot of these players aren't earning a lot of money. Obviously, we were talking about big players that are having injuries, which would be slightly different. But lower down, you know, even in the WSL, Simone McGill, like, a lot of these people are, you know, sharing houses with three or four people and they're professional footballers, and you just don't get that in the men's game. And that all those things have knock-on effects when you paint the entire picture for everyone. You know, what they're eating at home, what they can afford to cook at home. It's not as simple as, you know, oh, accidents happen, people get ACL injuries. There's so much that contributes to it. And you touched there, Rachel, on that unfortunate miss for Rennie Renard, which certainly got a few people wanting to get some attention on social media, but I'm not going to go into that.
Please don't. Let's not waste our precious media.
That's what they want. But more importantly, have you guys seen enough from France at the moment from those two performances? And that result against Belgium, 2-1, they were, pushed back a little bit with Belgium's goal, but they controlled the majority of the game, but I think they were just sloppy in the final third. But have you guys seen enough from the two performances so far to have them as equal favourites as England, or actually out and out favourites?
I still don't think there's an out and out favourite. I think every team has a weakness. I think France are definitely up there as favourites. They're frightening going forward. Cascarino was unbelievable. Diani, like, they put the shits up here coming at you on the pitch. But I just think France switch off in both second halves, and that's something they'll need to look at, because like England, when they come up against tougher opposition, that's an area they're going to look to exploit. Now, they still had control in the second half, but Belgium did come forward a number of times, and it was their own undoing that stopped their kind of momentum coming forward, whether it was a poor pass or a poor cross, and France kind of just had to wait for Belgium to kind of mess up. So again, had they been playing maybe a stronger team, those kind of flurries forward could have been more effective. So that would be my only thing, is the second half of France is that they need to stay switched on.
I think they look bloody powerful. And I think where they come out, they're almost a bad match for us in a way, because we don't come out, or we haven't come out in the last three games, I don't think, particularly strong. And France have a tendency to come out really, really bloody strong.
100 miles an hour.
So it feels like if we don't tighten up that area, if we are, if we do come into a situation where we're playing them in the final, as Flo worked out, 45 minutes into an episode.
Hey, it all matters, all right?
And thanks, massive shout out to Sue, actually, for just simplifying the whole process on Twitter. Thank you. Really helpful for everyone. I think that's going to be our biggest threat, I think. But I do think France are definitely up there as one of the favourites, along with us, obviously. And obviously, I'm, you know, not biased at all.
The other game in Group D was Italy against Iceland. This one finished 1-1, and it was a result that didn't really help anyone. Certainly a result Iceland feel that I think they threw away a massive opportunity to try and get through to the quarterfinals. And now they've got a very tough game against France, and the expectation is probably that France will blow them away and scupper any chances they have of getting out of the quarterfinal. And they dominated large parts of this game. They could have been maybe 2 or 3-0 up, but they let Italy get back into the game. Some important second half substitutions after Cristiana Girelli and Barbara Bonansea, my best Italian there.
Italian, come on.
They were both dropped after that embarrassing defeat to France. And Italy was so bad in the first half against Iceland, just trying to play route one, kick it long every time. Iceland picked them apart. They went 1-0 up through a brilliant, brilliant Karolina Vilhausjamsdottir. That's my Iceland attempt, but it's probably more German.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant,
okay.
Brilliant goal. But then the substitutions made. Bergamaschi gets an equaliser, and Italy finally start to actually play football in the final third, play it on the floor, and Iceland end up in tears at the final whistle because they know they missed an opportunity there. Rachel, do you think that they could get a result against France to give them any hope of getting through to the quarterfinals?
I'm not going to lie, you've distracted me there with your butchering of both Icelandic and Italian. But
Bonanseia, that was good. Come on.
So Sophie tipped Iceland. They were her dark horses. And I think they've probably given themselves a massive job to do now. It's a shame they didn't get that result against Italy. But yeah, it's going to be a very tall order to get a result against France. We've just talked about them there, how frightening they look. So yeah, it's a tough ask for them. It's a shame. It would have been nice to see them and the Viking clap go through to the next round.
Tough. I think I'm going to lay it out there and be really, really savage. It's fucking impossible. It's just not happening. So yeah, that's my analysis on it.
Unless, France go with the approach that Serena Wiegmann didn't and Karine Diacre decides to rest players. You know, the Katoto thing maybe shocks her into resting players and that opens the door for Iceland. But yeah, I think it is going to be a big task. And Italy may have just saved themselves because they have a very good chance, if they can beat Belgium in that final game, of getting through to quarterfinals, having not really played particularly well. And I came into this tournament with decent expectations of them to get out of the quarterfinals. And they might just kind of edge it on luck alone, really. And, you know, who knows what they'll do in the quarterfinals. I don't have massive hopes on this tournament. I have been really disappointed in them. But, you know, they get through to the quarterfinals. That is some success, but I expected a hell of a lot more, but we'll have to see what happens in those remaining games, and we'll obviously be talking about it. It is Saturday. God, I can't work out what day of the week it is these days. It's Saturday, so we've got the final group games in Group B, which is absolutely wide open for that runner-up spot. We know that whoever finishes runner-up will be playing England, and in Brentford tonight, in West London, under the lights, under what is sure to be a beautiful sunset, it'll be Denmark versus Spain in a straight shootout for the quarterfinals. Rachel and I will be there. It's going to be epic. I can't wait. I think it's sold out. I've seen a few people trying to get tickets / trying to sell tickets. So let's hope they all link up. And then the dead rubber, 50 miles down the road, is in Milton Keynes between Finland and Germany. Shout out to Finland fans. They've been brilliant. But it's all about Spain-Denmark tonight. Cannot wait. Want to get a quick prediction from you guys before we wrap. Spain, Denmark, who's going to make it through, Chloe?
Oh, I think 1-0 Spain. They're going to just about edge it, but I think Denmark are going to put in an absolute bloody shift tonight.
Rachel?
2-1 Spain. I also think Spain are going to edge it.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're just more of a total package. I think Denmark are a little bit crap and just rely on Pernilla Harder to drag them through, right?
Very probably tired from those first two matches. And it's to finish against Spain, where they're going to have to do an awful lot of running. It's a lot to ask.
They're just quite bad at defending, and Spain are just going to drag them out of position, move them around like kind of, you know, little Tetris movements and just create the gaps and find the space. And they will find the finish, I think. I think they will find the finish. I am intrigued to see what Jorge Vilda
Christensen does. Denmark's Christensen is bloody good. I hope she plays well tonight. She's had a good tournament so far, pulling off some top saves. But I think you're right. I think they will pull them apart a little bit. I think Denmark don't really have a plan B if Harder gets marked out of the game. Good game. I still think it's going to be an exciting game.
It will be. So make sure you tune into that one tonight, listener. Thanks, as always, for listening to Upfront. A reminder for all you Ramble listeners, you can find all our Euros episodes over on Football Ramble Presents. Obviously, we're always here on the main Ramble feed after an England show. But if you want all the good Euros content, make sure you get over to Football Ramble Presents. If you've got any questions, you can tweet us at Football Ramble, at Floyd Tweet for myself, at Girls on the Ball for Rachel, or at Morgie_89 for Chloe. And we will be back with you on Tuesday.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.